Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.
We're back, baby. Let's go. Week seven of Something Wrong with the Podcast. It's your boy, Julian. Before I go anywhere, call in at this number, 877-557-SWWP, to get in contact with me, your intrusive thought therapist. Guys, it's a beautiful day in New York. I got a haircut. I chopped the beard. Look, you can see it's down. Took a lot off. Took some off the top as well. Took 2 inches off the top, guys. It's a pretty extreme change. I wanted to get a nice summer cut. It was a beautiful Saturday in New York, and I was bopping around, and I was like, you know what? I got to get a cut. I want to feel like not only is the weather turning, but I'm turning. I've been hibernating. I feel like I haven't gotten a proper cut. I know I haven't gotten a proper cut in months, so it's time to just get to it. I wish things were all beautiful and prim and green, by the way, but unfortunately, it's been a really rough week for a lot of people, including people that I know and the politics at large. I did want to speak on something that I tweeted and ultimately deleted, which I'll get into in a second, about a friend of mine that works for a small veteran-owned business, and the government, DOGE, cut their funding. The Veterans Affairs, if you're not aware, political sphere, DOGE is doing a lot of major cuts to save budget, but a lot of those cuts are happening at the expense of people that are doing contract work, and they just cut a large sum, about 3,000 people, from the Veterans Affairs department. And the person I know specifically was working with veterans and helping them get medical care and getting them like job services and getting them back on their feet when they come back. And the company was founded by a veteran. They just celebrated a 10-year anniversary, and then they were told that the whole company is going under and they closed their doors. I made a pretty lengthy tweet about it, and I actually obtained some audio from that call from the CEO, because was reached out by a New York Times reporter, which was interesting. I connected my friend with him and they spoke, and hopefully this piece will give a lot of people some insight as to what's actually going on, because it is pretty messed up. But I don't want to dwell on that too much because I don't want to bring the vibe down. You know what brings the vibe up, though? Talking about Epstein and the Epstein files. The only thing up there is that Trump, when he came into office, said it very explicitly, I'm going to release, what did he say, the JFK files? He said the Epstein files, and there was one other, the January 6th commission. And he was very adamant about that. And of course, you know, these files get released. We can see that Trump has been on this flight a few times, as has, you know, Clinton. It always seems to be the Clintons and Trump, the names that keep getting thrown around. And then we see notable figures like Naomi Campbell, Kevin Spacey, Chris Tucker were also passengers on Epstein's plane at various times. It's to no surprise that Epstein and Trump's relationship started off great. And like most relationships, it seems, with Trump, end horribly. Epstein was using Mar-a-Lago as a hunting ground, so to speak, to find his victims, to find women. And once Trump caught wind of that, once he was tipped off about that, basically wrote him out of his life and said, get out of here, you're not welcome here, which, you know, respects to Trump on that one at least. But now we're seeing more names get brought up, and Eid Barak, the former Israel prime minister, was at Epstein's New York estate as recent as 2017, yikes, and he had visited him at least 30 times in a five-year period from 2013 to 2017. Everyone's talking about these flight logs. I don't think anything will come with that, because there's been reports in the past of extensive reports of the names and, you know, activity, and the private jet world, commercial private jet world, is very iffy, because just because you're on a flight doesn't mean you're there to do, you know, despicable things. The community is small, and a lot of people, you know, have colleagues or friends or whatever that, hey, yo, use the jet to go here, or I have an emergency, I have to go here. It's kind of like in Entourage, if you're fans of Entourage, when the guys needed to get somewhere international, I believe it was. I forget which film festival they were going to. I think it was Cannes or something like that. And Kanye, they were all on the same tarmac. And the guys, the Entourage guys, like Vinny Chase and the boys, their plane wasn't, they couldn't go. And Kanye happened to be on the same tarmac. He was like, yo, come with me. It's all good. Like instances like that, where I know it's it's probably not the case here, but basically when Vinny and those guys got on the plane, they had to be, you know, everything has to be logged, hence the flight log. So, okay, well, who are these new five guys that have entered this jet? This all needs to be documented. We need to keep a record of this. So it could be something as frivolous as that. With Epstein, I don't think that's always the case, but I think that there are cases where this man did have access to a jet and he had a lot of powerful friends that probably needed to be in places at obscure odd times, or just, you know, constant schedule changes and shifts, and having someone that was readily available and willing to offer you a jet is nice. So I think people would go to him for that. But I'm not cutting Epstein any slack. Back to the nastiness here. That was more to the people that may have been on those flight logs, but, you know, weren't necessarily aware of all the atrocities that were going down. Although I think if you're around him, you probably know what type of time he's on, no matter what capacity your friendship is with him. The real thing that we need from this whole, every year, every few years, it's like Groundhog's Day with Epstein. There's something new. There's something new. But the one thing we need that we've never gotten access to, the one thing that we should care about most, and the one thing I certainly would love to see, are those marked CDs, DVDs, and hard drives that had names on them, specifically of who was on them. And I'm not saying I want to see them as in, like, I want to watch them for entertainment's sake. I just want to know what are on those files. I mean, it's video files. There's audio files. That would change everything. The way in which Diddy, for years, was his rep was known, and everyone knows Epstein, the way with Diddy, it was always rumors, but once you see it, once that Cassie video came out and there was concrete hard evidence, I know people in the hip-hop sphere that were on the fence with Diddy, and then as soon as that came out, it was the switch went off and they're like, well, fuck him forever, he's a piece of shit. And it's sad that it takes something like that to get people, you know, to that point, but I get it. I mean, the world now is so visual, everything is put in our palm of our hands on our phones. We're so overly over consumption. So it's a matter of, I think we're conditioned to be like, well, if I can see it, I can believe it, which isn't always the case. When bad things are happening, more often than not, people do their best to make sure that they don't get seen or to make sure those things don't exist. However, in this case, I believe Epstein, knowing his clientele, knowing the people that he, you know, was in contact with, in the same way Diddy did, wanted to record them, wanted to have dirt on them, to basically, for blackmail purposes, hey, you know, you provide me, you give me access to all of your contacts, your political affiliations, I'll provide the girls, but I'm filming everything, and you can go down with this ship too, which is why I think Epstein sank alone in the end. Where are those tapes though? Basically, when those tapes were obtained and they were at his property here in New York, when the CIA obtained those tapes, they basically said, oopsies, we don't know where they went or who has them. So is this a matter of, are they destroyed? Which I don't think that they are, because I still think even though they were seized, the people that now have them in their possession, in the same way in which Epstein would use them as blackmail, well, can now look at them as like, well, wait a minute. There's a lot of powerful people. There's a lot of recognizable names on these tapes. We can hold this just in case. It's just like a fail safe. I think whoever owns them wouldn't want to destroy them. And then we have to talk about the 7.5 minutes that the camera was cut in Epstein's cell. Remember when Epstein died, it was under Trump's administration. I think it's safe to say that Trump, you know, hit the green light to have him taken care of. And so now we're just in this space of what is going on? What should we expect? And then you see people like Kimball Musk, Elon's brother. I don't know if anyone knew this. Elon's brother met his wife through Epstein. She was one of Epstein's girls. And remember, when it comes to sex trafficking and all this stuff, everyone likes to focus on the underage side of things because it's the most egregious offense. But not every woman that Epstein was parading was underage. Not every woman he was offering services from was underage. A majority of them probably were. But there were women of age that were in part of this as well. So, you know, you have someone as close as to Elon Musk, who, you know, his brother, someone that, you know, Elon obviously has a relationship with Trump. He's basically seemingly pulling the strings over there. There's still, even though Trump himself removed himself from Epstein, there still is some interconnectivity between those two parties, which is interesting. I hate to stay on politics, but we're going to hammer politics at the top of this because there was that really, really, really odd meeting, an infuriating meeting between Trump and Ukraine President Zelensky. Where does one even begin? The video, if you haven't seen the videos, please watch. But if you're not aware, leading up to this meeting, in the weeks leading up to this meeting, Trump has been going off on Zelensky, calling him a dictator, saying he's not a leader, saying he's really short and has small feet and all these, you know, the classic Trump way to just kind of knock somebody down any chance he gets every time he touches a mic. And the goal, it seemed, was to get into Ukraine for their minerals and raw materials, which even like speculatively, not quite sure if they're as valuable as Trump is making them out to be. It's just it seems like he's so far bought in on you owe us because of the $300 million in military equipment and services that we've provided for your war with Russia. Give us all your materials, which isn't, I'm not shitting on Trump. That's not that's very common. Most time the United States government gives aid or provides military relief. In exchange, you give us the, you know, what's on your land? What can we harvest? What can we source? What can we take back to the U.S.? What can we put in our products? What can we then seize and sell? What do you have to offer us? Because we're giving you shit to protect your land, but you're in turn going to owe us some of that land back. Not the physical land. Well, yeah, actually, yes, the physical products that come from your land. You'll keep your country. Give us the minerals. So as the meeting approaches, the journalists were saying, you know, you're meeting with European leaders. Do you still feel that way about Zelensky? And Trump did exactly what he loves to do in those cases, which is hilarious, that he's just a one-trick pony. I love that he goes, I don't know what you're talking about. I never said he was short. I never said anything about him being a dictator. He was kind of retracting his statements, taking them back. Because, you know, this is like the classic case of you talk shit online or like in a Twitter spaces or whatever, and then you realize you have to run into the person you were talking about in like a week or so's time. And as that time's approaching, the more and more people ask you, hey, remember when you were just trashing so-and-so? Aren't y'all about to see each other like tomorrow? Then you start to kind of dial it back. No, I didn't say, come on. I didn't really mean it like that. You know, we were cool. It was that. Trump was kind of giving that energy. But then they sat down, and Trump and J.D. Vance kind of got in his ass, and it was really a very, very uncomfortable interaction. And Zelensky was visibly frustrated. And J.D. Vance is such a fucking loser, but he was, you know, you need to thank the American people, thank us. And Zelensky was like, dude, I've been thanking. So then obviously post that meeting, Zelensky goes online, thanks everyone on Twitter as like, you know, what a fuck you to the guys. But it didn't go well. And I don't know what's to come of it. Trump, after that meeting, immediately got back on his jet on Air Force One and flew back to Florida. And back to home in Mar-a-Lago, where seemingly it sounds like he might be having a meeting with the Tate brothers because they are on the run. Let's read this here. Andrew and his brother Tristan had been in Romania facing charges of human trafficking, sexual misconduct, and money laundering. Their cases garnered significant attention within right-wing social media circles, where they are portrayed as martyrs of political persecution. The pair, who deny all accusations, were under a travel ban as criminal, under a travel ban as criminal investigation continued. However, the Romanian government recently lifted these restrictions, allowing them to return to the United States. There's rumors that they flew directly to Florida, and they are believed to be spending the weekend with Trump. So after Trump ignited his relationship with Zelensky, he might also just be linking with the Tate brothers. He's living a very, very streamy, like Aiden Ross, idealistic world right now. If that makes sense, if you guys can picture what I'm saying, but except he's the president, and this is probably very bad for us. It seems like everything is a joke and everything is a meme, but these have very serious ramifications. We'll see. I'm curious to see what comes of this. I don't understand why people are still so fascinated with the Tate brothers. The people like Andrew and Tristan are embarrassing. I think they're politics aside, I just think that they're idea of what it means to be a man is just lame and corny and very prepubescent, on the verge, like just middle school. When I grow up, I'm going to have muscles and fast cars. I'm going to get women. It's just, it's like your goal. You don't evolve past like a 12-year-old's vision of success. It's weird. The bald heads, the cigars. It's like, who are you trying to be? It's not a real, you're not being a person. You're being a character. It's just very, it's very odd. In other odd news, Trump posted that video of him on Truth Social with his vision for Gaza this year. So that very, very, very odd AI generated promo video that I'll insert here. If it's not on this video, it's because YouTube took it down and I had to take it off. But if you're watching it, play along. There's a gold Trump balloon. There's Elon throwing money on the beach on children. There's a Trump Gaza waterfront property. Elon dipping some bread into pita. Everything is gold. It's just Trump and Elon and Netanyahu laying on the beach next to Trump. It's very odd. And it's just Trump just, I think at every turn, reminds us who he is. He's a real estate man. He's a businessman. I mean, I hope this is worth it. I hope this is what the people want. I hope this is what you guys voted for, to have a Nobu Gaza and to have the sashimi there while the very people that used to occupy that land, I don't even think would be able to get a job there. But yeah, sure. If this is the vision, fucking knock yourself out. This is incredibly embarrassing and stupid. But yeah, I hope it's worth it. And we need to put a mini mall over there. We just lost one in the Palisades. You can build this version of it over here. Put it on the waterfront. I'm sure it'll look gorgeous. The waves crashing against it. God, this stuff is so frustrating. I don't want to be negative, guys. I'm really trying not to be negative, but it's hard to remain optimistic. You know, it's very hard to remain optimistic when the people, the politics that be, the people in charge are just so difficult. I sound like the angry Democrat. The Democrats are just as embarrassing in other ways. I'm not a fan of how they need a new identity, and they needed it yesterday, because it's not Kamala for the next election cycle. I'll tell you that. Well, who are the Democrats? What do they look like? They lost the working class. The Black and Hispanic are still turning more towards Trump and polling in numbers. Where's their new identity? Who are they polling for? Who are they reaching with their political messages? I don't know. One person that I do hope figures it out is my oldest brother, Antonio Delgado, again, staying in politics, but local politics, if you're a New Yorker. If you're not aware, my brother is lieutenant governor of New York, which is basically second in command in the state under Kathy Hochul, who is the current governor, first female governor of New York. My brother announced that he's resigning. He's not rerunning for lieutenant governor in this upcoming election cycle. What does that mean for him next? Who's to say? I'm sure he'll speak more on that at some point. But I'm very curious to see what the local news cycle, political landscape looks like in this state. And I'm excited to talk to him more about what he wants to do and what's next. I'd actually love to have him on here. I'm going to try to figure that out. He has a very busy schedule, but it would be really, really cool to have him on as a family member, but also a political expert as well. In music news, Drake canceled his remaining dates in Australia and I believe New Zealand. And it's a matter of routing. I've toured quite a bit. Since I've been on the road, not every year, but the first time I did a tour was in 2018, 19. So I've been on many different tours, music tours. And basically, they had Drake doing 4 shows in 16 days. So if he had done them, he'd be sitting around Australia for like 12 days doing nothing. And it's a huge waste of overhead and money resources. Obviously, Drake doesn't travel light. You have equipment, people that are doing the physical production, building the set, lighting, engineers, dancers, costume, stylist assistants. I mean, I can't even fathom the sheer number of people that Drake has to have with him at all times to make one of these shows operate. And obviously that means with that comes you're feeding all these people, you're housing all these people, they're expensing stuff to you. So this is just an accruing bill. So when you see something, I mean, no artist wants to see, especially in a foreign country, I've only four shows in 16 days. My only question with this in particular is, how was this booked? Who booked this, and why was this scheduled this way? Because for him to cancel this, it's kind of being branded or marketed as, well, we didn't know. Well, these tours get booked so far out in advance, months in advance. They knew the routing. So I'm just curious how come these questions weren't brought up before the tour went live is really what I'm asking. They didn't just slap these dates onto Drake, you know, this week and say, hey, man, you got these four more shows, but it spanned over 2 weeks. These are things that were booked. And I understand it from Drake's side. Like that is a scheduling conflict. Call it what you want. I understand the headline is scheduling conflict. That's awful. That's all. Drake can be doing a lot of, I mean, with someone like that, time is money. Like everybody, time is money. And what is his time? How much is he losing? The value of just sitting around. Not only is he losing money, potential other, you know, job streams of revenue, he's also bleeding money because he still has to take care of all those people that are with him on the road there as well. It doesn't make sense. I'm curious who routed that. Why did they route it that way? And why is this now just coming out? I think it's odd that this is just becoming a thing. I don't blame him for wanting to go home. It sucks that, you know, these are sold out shows. These are people that probably get to see Drake once every, you know, 5 years or so, which to them is the fans. I get it. And I guess the rescheduling tickets for shows will be treated as valid for rescheduled ones, for rescheduled tours. So who knows when Drake will be back in that part of the world. But I don't blame him for just being like, I'll eat the cost. I'm sure he got advance money up front, and he'd rather eat that cost and go back to Canada than, you know, putz around there for almost for over 2 weeks waiting to just do four shows. Interesting. I don't know why that was drawn up that way. Odd. And another twist of odd Drake news. Not odd, but he was able to settle legal action against iHeart dispute, the Not Like Us case, which is ongoing, by the way. This is just one of the many settlements that I would assume are going to come down the pipeline, but just one of the issues has been resolved. There are many more out there. Here we go. Let's read this. Drake has reached a settlement with Texas-based iHeartRadio, ongoing legal dispute over Kendrick Lamar's diss track, Not Like Us, according to court records. In November, Drake filed a legal petition in Baxter County, Texas, where San Antonio is located, alleging that iHeartRadio had received illegal payments from UMG to boost radio play for Not Like Us. UMG is a parent record label for both Drake and Lamar. Yeah, we know that. There's no amount. They didn't disclose what the actual settlement was or the terms of the settlement, which I don't think we deserve to know anyway. But this is just, I think, in a long list of keeping track of all of the filings that Drake made. Let's just see where all of these go. I think most of these will end in settlements or to no avail at all. And I will keep saying this, no matter how many of these Drake wins, no matter how many filings he wins or loses, by the way, it's not, you know, win or lose, you lost the beef. And you can, you know, you can bat 1,000 with these court cases. It doesn't matter. At least to me. I could just be speaking for myself. I'm sure there's people that care about the court, the legal side of things. I don't. I just care about the rapping side of things. You know, who would have thought? I thought that's why we cared about this artistry stuff. In other news, what else is going on? What have I been listening to lately? I've been listening to a lot of jazz. I've been back heavy in my jazz bag, especially as the weather turns. I've been listening to a lot of that Larry June 2 Chainz album, Life is Beautiful, and The Alchemist. Really, really, really big fan of this album. Especially the weather being nicer out. 2 Chainz is one of the funniest artists of all time. Larry just says stuff and it just sounds cool. He'll just say, like, he'll just name items and it just sounds like the most prolific raps you'll ever hear. He'll just talk about walking into a store and looking at shoes and bags and it just sounds like, damn, that's cool. And then 2 Chainz, like, I get rid of my exes, like Mexico or something like that. It's just, there's so many cool lines in that project. Huge, huge fan. That's been heavy in my rotation. Les McCann, Much Less, is a jazz album from 1969 that I've been listening to a lot. It's only 5 records, really quick listen, fire music, if you want to check that out as well. In television news, I haven't talked about this show yet on here, and I really do not want to give spoilers, but there has to be a contingency of people that listen to this show that also watch Severance. I'm usually the guy that is late to every show. I never watch it while it's hot. I'm years late to everything. I watched Breaking Bad long after it aired. I've watched, I'm trying to even think of other examples of this. Gossip Girl. No, I just watched like all every show that had a moment that was big or even had like a big Twitter online footing. I'm always late to, or I'll just watch it years after. Severance is the only show that I'm watching it as it's currently happening. And I'm obsessed with it. My feed is filled with fan theories, just everything that you'd want as a diehard. If you're not familiar, Severance is an incredible Apple TV show. The concept is basically if you could live 2 different versions of yourself, meaning there's a surgery that you get done, you put this like chip in the back of your head, and your outie, you have an innie and an outie. So this me, Julian, is... this is my Audi in New York City. But if I were to work in an office, when I would scan in, I go into an elevator, I go down or up the floor, whatever. And in that process, it flips on the chip. And then I go, it's like a visual effect and audio effect goes. And then I'm basically a different version of myself. It's still me. There's nothing different about who I am. It's just my memory down there is different than my memory up here. So basically, when I leave work and I come back up that elevator, I wouldn't remember anything that happened in work that day, and vice versa. If I'm down there, I wouldn't know what would happen today. I couldn't tell you what I did on Saturday when I'm down there. So you'd basically live 2 different lives. I don't want to get too much into the show itself. It's incredible. I don't need to sell it. It's like the hottest thing out right now. But the star of the last episode... well, the acting aside, I really want to focus on the director because it was her directorial debut, and I just want to give her, it's my platform, I want to give her flowers. Her name is Jessica Lee Gange, and she absolutely put on a masterclass with season 2, episode 7. The cinematography, the editing, I learned that there's this one incredible shot where they actually physically flip the set and pull us through all these cables, that was not actually done with CGI. That was done with a large-scale production set design that they made, the physical thing to make it look like there was coming through these cable wires. It's just, the audio engineering, the visuals, everything about that episode was what you would want from a show like Severance. And it's very rare these days to have a show that starts with a boom, live up to the hype, or it doesn't die down, or the content doesn't get diluted, or they try to swing for the masses and it becomes a little too kitschy. This show has remained highly entertaining, very well written, and very thought provoking. And Ben Stiller is the director of it. And if you're a fan of psychological mystery, alternate universes, alternate realities, kind of rather contemporary dystopian universes, it just watch it. Just give it a shot. It is a slow build. It is a slow start. But once it picks up, once it gets going, it's truly is one of the best watches currently on television. And I'd love to read these comments at some point and see who else is watching it. Because if there are a lot of people watching it, I will continue to talk about it because it is a big part of my life. It airs on Thursdays. All right, it's that time of the episode. Let's get into voicemails. As a reminder, you can call me at 877-557-SWWP to get in contact with me, your Intrusive Thought Therapist. Also, if you want to be a sponsor or a part of the show in any other capacity, email me at somethingwrongwithpod@gmail.com. Let's get into these voicemails. Still love that song so much.
Now we don't need to worry about names. But I just needed some help with an intrusive thought, bro. Where can I start? So I'm in my late 20s here, about to turn 30. And I recently got married. Congrats to me, whatever. All cool, cool, cool. But the thing is, I also recently lost my job. But unlike you, dude, I can't find another one. So while I've been kind of just sitting at the house trying to find a new job, I've found myself kind of falling back into like old bad habits, if you will. I don't know if you're up with like the new kids speak, but like gooner type behavior. And I just need some help stopping, man. Like, you know, idle hands, whatever that fucking saying goes. I don't know how it goes, but like, just help me with some words of encouragement to keep my hands from self-pleasuring myself.
Goon boy.
Get back to work.
Filthy.
And yeah, anything that you could say would definitely be helpful, bro. Much appreciated. The pod's awesome, man. Rory Miles, later.
Dude, you can't apply to jobs when you're gooning. Oh, you sicko. The saying is, I believe, idle hands are the devil's workshop. And if you're not familiar with that, basically means when you're not doing anything, the devil is more likely to get you in trouble and use your hands to harm yourself or do bad unto yourself. In this case, rub out a load. Goon sesh. Dude, I mean, you can't goon it if you're applying to jobs, if you're on LinkedIn, if you're on the phone with people trying to book an interview. There is a lot of, they say finding a job is a full-time job. There is some truth to that, especially in this market, dude. It sucks ass. So with respect to that, I mean, I started this episode saying a friend of mine, you know, basically just got undercut from a career that, you know, at the hands of Elon and Trump and them. But it's not a great market. It's a tough space. Currently, what can you do to not goon so much? I don't want to tell you to not rub one out. I understand that that's, you know, sometimes that's the therapy we need more often than not to go to sleep. How else can you drive your energy? Go to the gym, maybe get a lift in. That releases some goonish feelings. What else can you do? Just go outside, be around other people, unless you want to goon in public. I don't think you want to do that. It's not a good look. Yeah, man. I mean, you also have a girl. You're married. Try to reserve that activity for real intimate moments with your wife. I think that's a good fix. I'm not saying it's like, yo, I'm horny. Come over here. I want to. But, you know, try to reserve the pleasurable feeling of crumming for her, and not just, you know, in between after crushing a breakfast burrito and you got 6 hours of downtime before you take out your laptop and look on LinkedIn. You know, you don't want to have a stomach full of chorizo and crumbs at your bedside, and then you just fucking cream one out because you can. That is the play. I mean, the luxury being just a grown man is you can do it whenever you want, but you should do it responsibly. Do everything responsibly. Keep those idle hands away from your pecker. Put those hands over here and get to type in, you know, hit that keyboard, go to work, pick up a book, read. I mean, dude, I feel you. I mean, I'm in a similar boat in terms of like when you're a guy, you just thoughts of this stuff just comes through your mind and you're just like, fuck it. Like, I got, you know, I know me better than anybody else. I can crush one in like fucking 45 seconds. Let me just do this real quick and then I'll go about my day. You don't have to jump on the urge. You drop the middle school mentality. Don't jump on the urge every time you want to crumb. Just like compartmentalize it and say, hey, this is reserved for, you know, maybe limit yourself. I'm imagining you're gooning more than once a day. Get it down to once a day, and then even if you can get it on, like, you know, reduce that cycle even more and more and more until you feel like you're at a healthier spot. I would like to ask you, before you did get fired, how often were you gooning, and you know, what to you is a healthy routine versus how, what is the volume now? I am curious to know that. That being said, man, stay active, keep finding a job. Yeah, reserve that time for your girl. But you know, man, wishing you the best. And I hope you're not gooning to this episode. It'd be really weird if you were rubbing one out to me. I don't think this voice is sexy. I think if you honestly, if you just replay episodes of this show, it'll probably your dick will like go into, I don't know if you're snipped or not, but it'll just like retract into your body like a turtle. I think if you just continue to replay this, you will never want to goon again. That could be your fix. Just continue to run this back, run it back. Am I gonna goon? You just hear me talk. Think about that. Good luck, man. I'm rooting for you. Keep those hands clean. Make sure you wash your hands before you touch your dick too. Let's do another one.
Hey, bro. There's this girl that I just really fuck with, and like, I asked her out way back, and she kind of just like, I don't think she into it, but all right. How can I gaslight her into liking me? How can I trick her into being into me? I feel like you'd be good at this. Peace.
Yo, what are these calls today? I feel like you'd be good at this. I don't know if that's like an insult or I'll take it as a compliment. I mean, damn, I feel like I shouldn't give this kind of advice. This is like uncovering CIA files. This is like those Epstein files. Whoa, wait, not those files. Sorry. Whoa, slow down, buddy. Go get him, partner. What can you do? I'm sure if you're this into this person, I'm sure you know her Instagram. I'm sure you have her TikTok, whatever social media platform she's active on. Instagram's usually really all you need. Click around on there, see what she's into. Most girls these days have highlights. You can see where she's traveled, what music she's listening to, what diary entry she felt like she needed to post on that rainy Thursday in 2016. Use this time as this is research time. You're in the R&D phase of this relationship, research and development. You need to get all of your intake and build a base knowledge on her and everything she's into before you give it another crack. And obviously we can't change your physical, but we don't know what she's into aesthetically, looks wise, unless you know her ex or whatever, that'd be weird. But you need to, before you can even approach her again, you need to understand the enemy better than they know themselves. You need to understand everything about her, what she's into, who she fucks with. In high school, I had this crush on a girl and she was obsessed with The Killers and bands like that. And at the time, I didn't know who the hell The Killers were or what they were about. But I started listening to them because as I was passing her one day in art class, she used to have a Zune. Remember Zunes? She was like one of the few kids with the Zune. I was always an iPod guy, Team Apple. I walked by her desk and I saw the artwork to Hot Fuss, The Killers' debut album. And I saw, it was like Smile Like You Mean It or one of the songs on there. And I was like, all right, I'll go home. I'll give this a shot. Went home, jumped on my family computer in the den, the old Dell desktop, crush LimeWire, downloading this album. Throw it on a transfer to my iPod and it, this is like, you know, summertime ish or by the end of the school year. So I get on my bike and listen to his music and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I really like these guys. Brandon Flowers is speaking directly to me. Sam's Town, that album came out. Bones. If you're in love, if you want a girl, this caller here, you didn't leave your name. Listen to Bones from The Killers. Watch the music video. It's directed by Tim Burton. Clearly, you can get what I'm getting at with this, based on all the information I know about The Killers. I love the. They're my favorite. They're my literally my favorite band. Period. Of like the contemporary era, I'm obsessed with them. I know all their songs. I know all their albums. I've seen them live a couple times. They're incredible. I do a pretty impressive Brandon Flowers impression. Point being is my want to get this girl's attention got me into, unlocked for me a band that I was never aware of and ends up being my favorite band to this day. And it's funny because I don't talk to this girl. We have no means of communication anymore. But to this day, every time I think of the Killers, I'm like always kind of reminded of like, oh, shout out to her for putting me on to them. Did end up having a little summer romance with her. Never had sex. I did not do that until college. I was 17 in college, so I was still young, whatever. But did do some hand stuff, which was tight. Gooned a bit. And shout out to the first caller. We had a really, we had a fun summer. But point is, I fell in love with the Killers. And to this day, they are my favorite band. So I would, old school route, just look at her interest, assess what she's into. At the very least, maybe you discover something that she's into that you also like, and you can take that with you. It sounds like you're in the phase where you're just hyper-focused on this one chick. I would also advise you not to limit yourself. Don't get too creepy and obsessive. Sometimes when a girl knows the energy is that you really want them, they're less inclined to want you. I've experienced this firsthand twice over, where I feel like I kind of went a little too hard with a girl at the initial phases. And then as soon as I caught wind that they were giving me like a little bit of like a chill, like relax, as soon as I basically just like put it on neutral and just didn't, you know, wasn't an asshole, I just stopped like texting and stopped approaching, whatever. Then in like 3-4 months time, they both came around and were like initiating contact and wanted to hang out. So there's also that side of it. You don't want to be too obsessive, too overbearing, because that never looks good. That's not sexy. Being wanted is sexy, but being wanted in like a possessive I love you way is off-putting. It's weird. It's a delicate balance that you learn over time. I've been both. I've done the I fall fast thing, and then I've been the one that can also be reserved. It just depends on the person, and you just have to read the situation at hand. You could do what our first caller is doing. Before you meet with her, before you feel like you want to text her or heart her story or DM her, maybe you just, you know, goon it out real quick, get a goon session, and that'll clear your mind, clear your mental, and then assess and go from there. Nothing gives you better clarity than that PNC. You really want to give yourself that post nut clair and just let your mind move in the direction it should, not irrationally. You don't want to think with this head, not your other one. I'm rooting for you, man. Give it time. Don't rush it. Summer's coming up. Weather's getting beautiful. You'll run into her. That's also one of those beautiful things when you don't plan it and you see her in public. Maybe you know where she hangs out. You've been to the bar, seen her in the background. I don't know what city you're in, but you got the local scene, the lay of the land. Maybe you'll see her. Get her a drink at the bar, small talk with her friends, you know, be approachable. You don't want to be like a little weirdo. You never want to scare anybody. But I'm rooting for you, man. I hope you close. And I hope it leads to something more than just a meaningless romantic hookup. If it does, you know, whatever. Who gives a shit? It's summer. You know, fuck her and move on. You can do whatever you want. I'm rooting for you, though. All right. That's it for this week, episode 7. Sorry again, I haven't been doing live streams. I'm incredibly busy. I actually have to figure something out. I'm going to Austin, Texas for a week very soon, and I have to figure out how I'm going to tape either there or do this episode for that week in advance. I've got a lot to figure out on my end, but I'm here for it all. We're going to take it all in as it comes. Pause. Wow, crazy pause. Sorry about that. All right, I love you guys. I'm gonna go outside and hang out with some friends. It's a beautiful day here in New York. I hope it's beautiful where you're at. Keep your head up. DM me, comment on this. What do you want me to talk about? Someone sent me a little bit of money for a topic to talk about on the last episode, which I did. Shout out to you. If you do want things to be addressed in the episode, you could shoot me like a little donation or a message, whatever, and if I come across it, I'll acknowledge it. But appreciate y'all. Have a great week. Stay safe. Peace. Something wrong with the pussy.